Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Sports reporters assemble!
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, you heard it. The sports reporters. Oh, yeah. All three sports reporters back together again. What a nice thing. What a pleasant Friday we have in store for you folks. I'm joined by Robert Silverman of the Daily Beast up there.
No, you should mention Andrew first.
Well, he's the main event. He's coming back. I was getting you out of the way.
Oh, good. You did that. Anyway, hi, it's Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Go on.
How are you?
I'm fine. I just want to hear from Andrew now.
Okay. Also here, Andrew Hammond making his triumphant return on the pod after 2 weeks away of the Detroit Free Press. Andrew, are you all familied out? What was the experience like for you surprising your mom? Tell the listeners. You did a thing.
Yeah, so I came in, surprised my mother. I told her that I was going to be in Memphis where she resides. I told her I was going to be there like next week or 2 weeks after, because I told her that, oh yeah, NASCAR's in town this week and, you know, the Lions game. So basically, I'm just like super, super swamped, which I'm not, but, you know, had to kind of deflect and everything. So basically, I just showed up to like, we had like a family movie night in the backyard at my grandma's house. And I just like walked into the backyard and it's like, hi, mom. Like, I wasn't going to say anything at first, but, you know, when you haven't seen your mom in over a year, the first thing you want to say is hi, mom. And so, yeah, no, it was awesome. It was great. I don't know if I'm going to see her during Christmas, because I may go see my dad because, you know, this whole Delta variant. Shout out to America for basically getting us into the red zone. And then we decided to have like three holding penalties in a row. And now that we're like about 45-yard line.
In our desire to be done with the pandemic, half is in half the amount of time, we may be doubling the amount of time we're in the pandemic. It's a wonderfully American way.
You know what's crazy? So, like, on the plane back, I was supposed to have a middle seat. But as I'm, you know, checking, you know, as I, you know, scan my boarding pass on my phone, the lady says, oh, hold up just 1 minute. And I was moved up a row. Ooh. And it just for spacing, because they wanted to get people spaced out. And I noticed that on a flight when I flew from Seattle to Atlanta to visit my sister last year. And I noticed they did that. And I was like, oh, they're doing that again. And as I'm walking, you know, into the plane, I'm like, oh crap, they're doing that again. Like, so yeah, it's just as much as I enjoyed last weekend, which I did, the realities of where we're at in this pandemic, among other things in this country, is just so draining. So that was like a nice, you know, welcome back to reality moment for sure.
Hmm. I like it.
I haven't flown on a plane since this all began.
Same.
I haven't really left the tri-state area. So it's been a while. I've gone from Manhattan to Brooklyn and back. Gone mm-hmm. to Queens once. One brief trip to New Jersey. But, yeah, haven't really left this pocket of the East Coast since December 2019. So, yeah.
Hey, Bob.
That's a thing. Yeah, what?
Do you wanna hop on a plane? Forget about it. Do you get it? The New York thing, and you don't travel outside of the tri-state area anymore? Did you get
Chase,
that one?
That was very Mets of you.
Yeah, that was lame, man.
Like Chase, I love you, buddy, but swing and a miss.
That's a Steve Cohen on Twitter ass comment.
Well, that's a good transition.
Got him.
That is a good transition. Oh, let's get into your very online New York Mets owner. Not pleased with the offense, not pleased with the New York Mets falling behind. Their season is in a spiral. Couldn't be my team, Bob Sutherland.
They're getting their testes stomped by the goddamn Atlanta Braves again.
It's a tradition unlike any other. Who doesn't love it?
I was thinking about this the other day, what it would have been like if George Steinbrenner had access to social media when he was running the Yankees. And it would have been kind of like this. Just poorly written, dickish, ill-considered tweets at the worst possible fucking time.
Mm.
I mean, it's like, stop fucking tweeting. Fix the team or not. But just, it's not funny. It's not engaging. I don't feel like you care more. I feel like you're just a rich asshole doing this because you want to. It will not make all of us great huddled, unwashed masses and Mets fans like you anymore. You are, by definition of being that wealthy, a dick. You will always be a dick. So maybe put together a winning baseball team.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Are you upset over there, buddy?
I'm mad both on and
online and offline.
I'm mad.
So, weren't the Mets kind of like a sleeper, trendy pick for the World Series this year?
Nah, I think everyone thought, well, if everything
or was out, like it was like a deep run. Or it was like a deep playoff run, kind of.
They could have made a run. They had what appeared to be a very solid 1-8 offense and an above average at least pitching staff.
Right,
and but don't have either of those.
Win you a series, it seemed like the pitching staff was like, okay, if they get in the postseason, if you get in that first round,
if
that pitching staff is good enough to get
started. Everyone thought, hey, you're going to run DeGrom, Stroman, Carrasco, and Walker out for four games. You've got a better than average chance of winning each one. And with DeGrom, you've got an excellent chance. So, you know, what the hell? If they all get hot at the right time, who knows? Yes, DeGrom is dead, which is sad. But, you know, he died.
He kind of went full Matt, almost went full Matt Harvey without the
No, I mean, like, his stuff is still great. He just can't. I mean, this is something that sort of really freaked me out. And I'm not enough of a I am not a doctor or sports science expert in any way.
You just play one on TV.
Right. But it seems to me, a layman, that you cannot throw as a starter 100-mile-an-hour fastballs and ungodly 93-mile-an-hour sliders
all the time and not pay for it.
All the time and not have the arm go kablooey.
Like
that
the arm
was
is
my
like,
worry.
Lotto, I don't fit you.
Right. 3 years ago, DeGrom's fastball was averaging 97. 6 years ago, 7 years ago when he came up, it was sitting at around 94. He has gained, at a minimum, 5 miles per hour of average velocity on his fastball. He has not radically changed his motion. You know, he's tweaked a couple of things. He's not covered his hands in some kind of viscous, gooey substance in order to accomplish this. He's just, you know, gotten steadily better. But nobody knows if the human arm can do that repeatedly. And don't say Nolan Ryan could. I mean, yeah, maybe Ryan was the one guy who could pull it off and not have his arm turned to guacamole.
So, Bob, you actually brought up a good point. Sorry, Chase, if you were going to talk. But my uncles and I, because my uncle's all through in, like, middle school and high school, and we were watching the Little League World Series. And we're watching this kid, and, you know, basically they're on pitch counts. And this kid was on an 85 pitch count or whatever. And my uncles were sitting there just kind of like they understood why he needed to be taken out of the game. But it was just kind of like the way pitchers are treated now compared to, like, you know, of course, back in the day. And the game has changed. But it's so amazing to see how a guy like DeGrom could go, like, say if this were the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s,
DeGrom
maybe the 90s.
Has had 5 years of being pretty much, like, he has not had, you know, he had, I think he had, like, Tommy John surgery, like, after college before he reached the big leagues. And that's why he switched to shortstop, from shortstop to the mound. But he's been healthy. It's just that every year he keeps throwing harder, and there is no precedent in baseball history for a guy throwing harder at 33 than he did at 27. So we don't know. And right now it looks like, because he's just had nagging injuries all year and now something called inflammation that they don't even really know what it is. So what the hell? I mean, he might be gone. In any case, the Mets are not going to make the playoffs. It's fine. Their manager is also terrible, compounding everything else.
Who's the manager there right now?
It's Luis Rojas.
Oh,
he's
that's
a longtime
right.
minor league guy. He's a relative of the Alou family. He's just not very good.
But he also wasn't supposed to be the manager. Like that.
No, it's supposed to be Carlos Beltran, I maintain they should have kept.
I mean, they could easily bring him back. Like, Alex Cora is just back to normal.
What serves that ban?
Wait, say that again?
No, he wasn't
banned or anything.
He wasn't banned at all. The Mets just fired him. The only people who were given a ban were Cora and Hinch, and they're both back in the
books. Yeah, and Hinch is here in Detroit, so. Mm-hmm.
Who was also in a very uncomfortable situation this week. What do you make of that, Andrew? It's not on my notes, but we talked about it on the pod with FanGraphs' John Taylor this week. But what did you make of the Jack Morris?
So here's the thing. If you think you're trying to make a culturally, like, if it's even in the realm of, oh, this might piss somebody off, or this might piss a group of people off.
I think we haven't moved past ethnic humor being funny, haven't we? It's just not that funny.
It's just, no. And so, okay, so full disclosure, I have not heard it. I've just seen what's been said, and I was actually laying in bed when I got the alert from the Detroit Free Press, ESPN, all of it, and like I'm getting the alert basically like 10-15 minutes after it happened, and I'm just like, you know what, not even gonna listen to it, not even going to give it the views worthy enough. And yeah, it's kind of like we need to stop making cultural jokes that, one, aren't funny, two, they're going to piss a bunch of people off, And if you're going to make a cultural joke, or if anybody is going to make a cultural joke, let it be the person from the culture who's making the joke. I'm not saying that I endorse it, but if you're gonna do that, let it be from the person's culture. Let it be from that person. I'm sure Shohei Ohtani has a lot of jokes. I'm sure there's a lot of players from various backgrounds who have a lot of jokes that could tell a joke. But yeah, if it's going to piss a group of people off, don't tell the freaking joke or keep it to yourself. Like, just, it feels like people are using their 5-cent brain to cost them thousands of dollars in decisions. Like, and it's just so annoying. And so when I saw it, like, oh, Jack Morris is getting the Bob Brindley treatment, where he might be back, more than likely won't, because when I saw pretty much both the organization, the Tigers organization, and Tigers manager AJ Hinch come out with, yeah, not like, that's not cool at all. Like, that had me thinking, yeah, it's billable hours time, and he's probably done. They're just sorting out the contract at this point.
Yeah. Let's get Curtis Granderson in there. Let's do that.
I wouldn't hate it.
Let's do it. Yeah, no, it's just, I also wondered, like, because there was like a Elmer Fudd aspect to it, where they were like, he was trying to do Elmer Fudd.
No.
And if you listen to that, no. I don't think so. I don't think
it was a bad ethnic accent. I don't think he did it well.
Yeah, that's why people were like, is it an Elmer Fudd thing? And when I heard it the first time, there was Elmer Fudd did not pop up into my head.
Funny voice acting is a very specific skill.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to do good funny voice acting.
Yes.
Benicio del Toro does excellent.
Are they able to say Borat?
No, that's different. That's a character with a funny voice.
Mm.
Listen, this is my turf you're on. There's a difference between having a character with a comical accent,
mm-hmm,
or funny voice acting, which is you pick a funny voice and then try to build a character around it. Like, Tom Hardy does this a lot. Tom Hardy will pick an incomprehensible way of speaking and then just build the entire character around that. Which is not what Jack Morris was doing either.
Mm.
Jack Morris just sucks. Did you get, people, I forget who had tweeted this, but there's a story from, did you guys read, or you there at home, Dave McKenna, when he was at Deadspin, wrote a really, really just heartwarming and very sad and upsetting, not heartwarming, sorry, the opposite of heartwarming. Really just a very, very sad, let's leave it at that, profile of Jennifer Fry, who was a longtime sports writer, first with the Washington Post and then the New York Times and also the Detroit Free Press for a while. And she had an encounter when Morris was pitching for the Tigers.
I learned this in journalism school.
Yeah, Jennifer Fry was a very talented sports reporter who unfortunately just drank herself to death. But she did, while she was working with the Detroit Free Press, go up to Jack Morris and try to ask him a question. And he's sitting there in his long underwear and said, I don't speak to people when I'm naked, especially women, unless they're on top of me or I'm on top of them. That was in 1987, I think, when he said that.
Yeah. Just.
So there's some Jack Morris for you.
Yeah.
Wasn't Morris, am I misremembering now? Am I just retconning his whole history? But wasn't Morris universally just loathed by the Tigers and around Major League Baseball?
I know it was around Major League Baseball. I'm not sure if it was just the Tigers, because I had this conversation with a friend of mine when we were talking about Hall of Fame guys and guys who need to be in the Hall of Fame. And we're sitting there, and we basically kind of had a line for each sport, NFL is Ken Anderson lying. Like, if it, like, he's like the perfect barometer for Hall of Fame, then I said, you know, Jack Morris is the barometer for Major League Baseball. And his first immediate thought was, yeah, F Jack Morris. And I was just like, all righty then.
Yeah, nobody liked Jack. Jack Clark, nobody liked him either. Also a bit of a bigot as far as the reporting goes.
Right.
Everyone hated Jack Clark. Dave Kingman is another notorious Major League Baseball
because
asshole.
It's like, yeah, it's like guys who, if they weren't such a dick, they would probably be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you could make a case for Jack Morris.
Yeah,
Jack Morris, one of the best pitchers of the '80s. You know, advanced metrics probably not as impressive as the 20 win seasons were back then, but still a dominant pitcher for a long
and time. And perhaps maybe put one of the best pitching performances together in postseason history.
Yeah, there you go.
But so, like, no, it's like there would have been enough. And yeah, he was just like, yeah, there's a reason he's not in there. And then it was like, oh, yeah, that's probably the same reason Barry Bonds won't go in, which I think is stupid. But, you know, let me get off that tangent. But yeah, Jack Morris, I'm good on that dude.
Yeah, I also just think baseball needs to clean house a little bit, and I think a lot of professional sports leagues are dealing with this reckoning where it's like you kind of just the grouchy old color commentator just needs to go. They need to get younger. They need to get people who actually like baseball in the booth and that are excited about the games.
And there's a drive deep to left field.
Well, that, and you need broadcasters who, one, can Major League Baseball broadcasting is in this weird space right now where you have really, really good storytellers. Joe Buck, Aham's close personal friend Joe Davis. Yeah, like there's a lot of good storytellers, and there's a lot of guys who can help carry a game as an analyst. But nationally, there is a bit of a struggle in terms of how do we keep our broadcast interesting without going to a place in freaking Iowa, even though that was cool. It shouldn't have taken, oh man, baseball is kind of cool when you take it out of the mundane atmosphere. But yeah, no, broadcasting is.
They should have let Costner feel a couple of grounders. They should have put Costner at
short. No, they should not have.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
No. Both
teams in the Field of Dreams game next year, both teams should be forced to play with one actor from the movie in the lineup for at least an inning.
You know what? And all of a sudden, I just hear Yankees fans begging for Ray Liotta to be the Yankees manager.
I was
going to
say it's actually the Cubs and the Reds next year.
Cubs and Reds. Cubs are getting Timothy Busfield playing first base like he did in the movie.
Little Big League. So I have one request to Major League Baseball. If you're listening, I know
Manfred loves the pod.
We had the old-time unis. I want the 1970s big red machine uniforms. But and then the Cubs. They have to be the actual uniforms.
You want the blue ones with the white pinstripes that the Cubs wore those years, Bill Buckner ones? Yeah. Yes. But they have to be tight.
Yes.
No more of this baggy shit.
You can't wear baggy pants. No.
No,
want you uncomfortable as shit.
What are you even talking about now? What is happening?
You're welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. I missed these tangents. Bob, back home in New York, this is not the owner of your sports team. Your sports team owner is usually off gallivanting in Europe for bad administrations. But John Mara went on and gave an interview or a press conference talking about the new NFL taunting rules and how much disdain there was at the league office among owners, front offices, about the taunting and how prevalent it is in today's sports ball. And the NFL has started throwing flags at dudes who hop up after a 15-yard run and then just stare down the person that tackled them after a first down. We saw that in the Colts game a few days ago. What do you make of the NFL cracking down on taunting, and is there any path to this not being a disaster? Back to you, Andrew.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to yeah, I absolutely hate the taunting rule.
Mm.
I think it's so dumb, because you got to remember, we've been in like this 5 to 6 year cycle where it's like, oh yeah, no, everybody's got to have a celebration. We had a freaking celebration cam put in the end zone, what was it, 2 years ago? Then they got elevated last year because of, oh yeah, by the way, there's no fans. So basically after an interception, the entire, like 20 guys will run down to an end zone and pose. But now we can't have somebody flexing on somebody after a hit. Really? That's a bridge too far. So it is basically this strange, if we can get some money out of it type of system. Yeah, I don't know. I'm so over the NFL. And this is my theory, and I hate, having thrown the tinfoil hat on. But I want to say that if the NFL could actually make money off of the whole flex thing, this wouldn't be a problem. Because remember, we had the whole Bud Light Selly thing and all that crap, and now, you can't flex. It's so stupid. It's going to cost somebody a game just for out of habit. I'm so over the NFL just trying to over police, but at the same time they understand that they really can't police this, so they're trying to be as minuscule as possible. I'm just like, get over yourselves, please.
I would just like to imagine there's some fans sitting at home I would love to watch the NFL. I would love to give them my money and give them my Sunday afternoons, but the taunting is just, it's a bridge too far for me. So I will watch AMC instead in lieu of my Tennessee Titans. I must retreat from this nonsense. Can't do it. Like who out there is actually annoyed by this outside?
The funny thing is, you do have a set of fans who hate the celebrating in the NFL. Like, they hate it so much, and they hate the fact that, I'll go there, black millionaire athletes are happy on a Sunday, and damn it, I don't want to see that on my TV because they're a bad influence for my kids. But the concussion,
true. No, it's true. My large son Blort. Poor Blort. He's a sensitive boy, and every time he sees Lamar Jackson or Cam Newton celebrate a touchdown, he imitates it in the house. And he's spiked, I think, at least 3 vases and ruined a chaise lounge. It's really terrible.
Well, prayers out for Blort.
He's got a team of therapists that are helping him with his anger issues and light racism. So we're working on it.
The last thing I wanted to touch on, guys, Draymond interviewed Kevin Durant this week, and it was quite good. And he and KD gaslit the Warriors front office and Steve Kerr, and what did you make of it, Andrew? What did you make of the back and forth, and what was revealed in that interview outside of Draymond just being a shoe-in for inside the NBA after he retires?
He was a shoe-in like 3 years ago.
He's so good at this.
he's legitimately one of the smartest, four or five smartest basketball players on the planet. Two, he's one of the best analysts of the game and a guy who can break down the game. Like when you hear him on Inside the NBA, it's like, this is what Kenny and Charles should be doing. Kenny does it a little bit, he used to be a little more detailed, but now that the game has kind of changed and evolved, it's not like that anymore. But yeah, it's like, that's the analysis that you're missing. You're missing from a new era, you know, type of guy. Anyway, there was no real groundbreaking stuff there. Like, it's stuff that we all kind of sort of knew. Like, if you had read books on the Warriors, you know, run and read stories about how things broke down, it's like, yeah, that we all kind of sort of knew that. So I think if you kind of came into it blindly, which I know a lot of people did, it's like, oh man, like this is, you know, and the headline grabbing stuff is going to be, well, you know, this is what they said about the Warriors front office. And it's like, yeah, we kind of knew that was going down, and you know, it's nothing. I think the Warriors organization understands we effed that up. Because they did, especially when Kevin comes back on an Achilles was it Achilles or an ACL? Because he had some ankle issues.
He had some ankle issues. It was mainly the torn ACL.
Yeah, and so, you know, he's pretty much, he's nowhere near 80% and playing, and it's like, this dude gives a damn about this organization, but at the same time, we know that he's gone because he needs something to prove to the front office. So I wasn't really shocked by that being kind of the revealing thing coming out of it. But at the same time, like, it was fine. I guess we're too exposed. The one thing I've kind of realized is that we're too exposed to what's going on now because everybody's got beat writers. There's, you know, four or five solid beat writers who can put together a long form piece or some type of literature or, you know, hop on a podcast, something to talk about these teams. You know, at best, there's four or five. You're always going to have one or two. But it didn't feel groundbreaking to me. It felt like kind of like, oh yeah, we kind of knew that. It didn't have the punch that it should have had and maybe could have. I think if we were a bit more scaled back in terms of how things are covered or what we do. So I listened to it a little bit and then I was just kind of like, okay, so we're just rehashing. They're just confirming what was already out there. So I was like, okay, it's fine.
Yeah. I also just think that KD is just, he's still surprisingly straightforward and real at this point in his career.
And at this,
oh, Bob disagrees.
Yeah, there's, I think there's some things that KD, I'm not saying that he's holding back from, but very selective.
I'm just going to say there's a reason that when the Times decided to do a schlong form profile of Kevin Durant, he led with 1,000 words about the formation of the universe.
Yeah, that was kind of...
I didn't see that. Can you send me that after we get off?
I'll send you a link. If I'd filed 1,000 words of throat clearing about, you know, that, I think most editors who I've worked with would give me a donkey punch before they'd let me print that. So kudos to them for running with it.
But mm-hmm.
I profiling athletes is very hard. Finding, you know, writing something truthful about an athlete is very hard. Writing something truthful about any public figure is a very difficult task. This is something that, like, the person who I think is best at it is a person who works for the Times named Taffy Broadesser Ackner, who's written every cool celeb profile you've read over the last 5 years. There's one she wrote right before the pandemic started about Val Kilmer, which is outstanding. There's another one that you wrote about Bradley Cooper, where Bradley Cooper refuses to participate in the interview process, and she includes all of that. It's great. There's a one where she goes on the road with, what's his name? Oh, God, I can't remember his name now. I hate being that age where I forget things. Billy Bob, with Billy Bob Thornton, where Billy Bob was like, okay, you can profile me, but you can't talk about movies at all. You just have to follow my band. Mm. She writes these great profiles, needless to say. And the thing she says she always tries to do is to remember, like, look, I can't tell you a single thing about this person. I get to spend X number of hours with them, and that sometimes is a short amount of time, and sometimes it's more time. But I don't know anything about them. All I know is the things that I've researched, and I've looked at the product they create, whether it's a movie or a song or whatever, or with a really outstanding profile of Gwyneth Paltrow, read many, many, many copies of Goop, Gwyneth Paltrow's lifestyle and wellness website and product and band. You should read more about Goop.
No, I will not. Nope. Mm-mm. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass too.
About Gwyneth Paltrow, a wellness and lifestyle influencer, and her website, Goop. You should know that. You at home, you should know this. But in any case, very, very long-winded introduction short, the thing that she says is like, look, I get X number of hours with a famous person. I cannot tell you what this person is like, because I don't know. Even if I got to spend a week or a month, I still wouldn't be able to do that. All I can tell you about is here's what it was like to spend this amount of time with this famous person. That's all you can ever do. And so she doesn't try to do any more than that. And so it ends up being very, very honest. And the other thing she says is, look, the big trick to doing these kind of celebrity profiles, and this holds true for athletes also, is you try to figure out what the public perception of that person is and the degree to which the famous person either likes or openly hates that public perception, usually the latter. And you try to figure, you explore the space between how they are perceived and how they perceive themselves and the way that it pisses them off. And that's where the fertile territory journalistically and in terms of literature comes from. And I feel with KD, it's very hard to do that because the public perception of KD is mainly for at least a good chunk of people, as a weirdo internet troll. And I don't know if KD would disagree with that much.
Oh, I think not at all. That.
And as to what else is there, like, you can do that with Ethan Hawke. Because, like, Ethan Hawke has a very clear perception of him as being a fucking auteur and shit. And so there are tensions
I will not allow any Ethan Hawke slander on this podcast.
No Ethan Hawke slander. She has a good profile of Ethan Hawke that you should read, though. Okay. I think you'll enjoy it a great deal.
I love Ethan Hawke. Maybe I'll just do the Before Sunrise trilogy this weekend. You just gave me an idea.
You should watch that. You can watch Priest if you'd like. I got to spend like about 10 seconds with Ethan Hawke for this story that I wrote when he was doing a play on Broadway a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, I didn't get to talk to him. I tried to set up an interview. His publicist weren't into it. But he was in this play, in any case, where he had to smash a lot of things on stage. And the prop guys were, you know, they had to explain to him, like, okay, here's how you can fake break things. And here are some things that you can actually break if you want.
Hmm.
And they were worried in, like, the final performance that he was just going to smash everything because nothing needed to be saved again, which he didn't. But in any case, during the performance I saw, he broke a golf club by accident. And we watched the head of the golf club go spinning off into the off stage. And he comes backstage and he goes, what the hell happened to the golf club? And the prop guy says to him, like, what do you mean what happened? You broke it. It was very funny.
Incredible.
He voiced himself a broken golf club. In any case, I'm going to make a point here, which is about Kevin Durant, which is like, I don't know if there is much, there is that much territory that is very interesting to be mined about how, about the differences between Kevin Durant's public persona and the way he is, because he is so heavily invested into like caring so much about this public persona. And that's why I feel like it's very hard to get to the heart of who Kevin Durant like might be in a journalistic reporterly profile way.
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong.
But I think there are some things in Kevin Durant, and I'm going to say they're personal things in his life. I'm talking about his career, that maybe he isn't, because even LeBron talked about this a little bit. I'm not the biggest fan of the barbershop, but but it does kind of poke in and kind of open up some of what, you know, some of the personal things that they talked about. Like he talked about the pressure that, you know, that he feels a bit of guilt naming his kid or naming his son after him, because he knows the pressure that's going to come along with it. I think there are some things that Kevin Durant hasn't talked about publicly yet.
I'm sure there are like incredibly detailed and profound things about his life and his journey that make him a fascinating human being.
I'm talking about I think he's still worried about the public perception of leaving Oklahoma City. I'm not saying that's like the root of where the insecurity comes from, but I think that's one of those things where we may never really know all that happened in terms of, you know, the whole thing with he and Draymond talking, all that. So, like, I think there are some things that he maybe will never talk about, because maybe he's just that private of a person, and he's just – there are some things that he's uncomfortable with talking about. So, yeah, he's going to go on different directions in terms of what he wants to talk about and all that. So, like, I get it, but at the same time, I'm just kind of like, dude, you don't have to worry. Like, if I were interviewing him, I'd be like, if you want to talk about it, fine. If you want to talk about it off the record, it won't be in there at all. But I think he's worried that people are out to get that gotcha exclusive, and I'm just like,
I think,
dude,
yeah,
it's really not that
bad. I don't even know if it's that. I think it's more he thinks it's weird how into stuff about Kevin Durant and like the behind the scenes and how granular people want to get on his life. I think he is genuinely like, why are you weird? Like, I think
can I rephrase my point that I was making earlier, because I feel like I didn't nail it and I want to do another take. Okay, here's the point. What Taffy explains is that you try to explore the tension between how people are perceived publicly and how they perceive themselves. Mm. And because Kevin Durant is so obsessed with how he is perceived publicly, it is very hard to find the space of actually how he perceives himself, because he puts all his attention on how he is perceived publicly, whether that is random internet beefs with like 14-year-old kids or leaving the like what his legacy has been tarnished by leaving Oklahoma City to pay for the Warriors, or whether his legacy was tarnished again or refurbished because he almost hit a game-winning shot for the Nets last year after being like the second player in NBA history to really come back from a torn Achilles. Because he really, really, very openly, publicly cares about the perception of how he is perceived, it doesn't leave a lot of space for how he perceives himself.
That's fair.
My better and more concise way of putting it. Take two. Cut the first take.
I'm not cutting the first take. This is not how this works here, Bob.
We never get rid of first take. We just keep giving it to Stephen A. Smith.
Mm, okay. I like that. We'll end there. Andrew, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week, honestly, just invest in watching. If you want to invest in watching preseason football, fine. God bless you. I'm only doing it for work purposes. But yeah, honestly, I would just invest in watching any type of sport, because I don't feel very good about the fall in terms of COVID and, you know, the political climate of this country. So find joy in sports, because I think we're really, really good.
Yeah, I don't know. Day at a time. Day at a time. Your pick of the week, Robert Silverman.
Wow.
I got nothing this week, guys. I can't.
You got nothing.
I as you can see, I don't prepare for this podcast.
Well, here's what you can do instead. In lieu of a pick of the week for you, and please, Pav, for the love of God, bring a pick of the week next week. A Max story. Your pup. I don't think Andrew has been on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Max, well, I'll tell you all about Max the dog next week. My pick of the week is everyone should get a dog. His name is Max.
I've thought about getting a dog, honestly.
Max is getting very territorial over the last couple of days and barking at even the sound of anyone walking past the apartment. So I'm trying to read up on the internet about how to do obedience training at home without paying a lot of money. And it's leading me to a lot of websites that are called like bark.com or rover.com. And it's, these are not good websites, but Max is a good boy. Let me just say that.
Max is a good boy. I like it. I like it. Can he do any tricks?
When he wants, he doesn't even have to, when he wants some of my dinner, which he always does, I have trained him to sit and hit my hand in which I'm holding the food. So much so that once I start eating dinner, he now just sits and starts pawing at me, being like, yo, give me some of that.
I like it. I like it.
As he should.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, we can follow you on Twitter at Bob Saeta. We can read you at the Daily Beast. Go do that if you've not already read Bob's latest on Tim Pool. Andrew, we can follow you on Twitter at @AhamFreePress. What can we check out from you this week?
Anything you'd like to plug? So there may be. So I'm bringing back into the archives with Aham. I'm actually going to do episode limits. So we're going to do 6 episodes for season 2. And then season 3 will probably do 6 because I've realized the research that I'm doing for like 2 episodes right now, a lot. So yeah, 20th anniversary of a specific event will be covered coming up in about a month and change.
Wait, I got a thing to recommend.
Yeah.
Everyone should read the oral history of Adam Sandler playing pickup basketball.
Oh, is that a thing?
That's a thing. It is quite awesome. It is stories of people, I believe. It is at melmagazine.com. If you Google an oral history of Adam Sandler, pickup basketball legend, it is just stories of people in the Los Angeles area and elsewhere. And what happens when Adam Sandler just shows up and says, yo, I got next.
That is, can you send me the link for that?
I'll send it right now.
Sweet. Because that might be my favorite thing. And just on the internet in general is just randomly seeing, oh yeah, Adam Sandler's playing. Like it used to be like, oh yeah, Adam Sandler's playing pickup basketball. That's awesome. That's cool. You know, he's out there and it's just like, oh yeah, Adam Sandler's balling still. That's good. And that's good stuff. Because I'm sure he has a gym at home or he has a court outside his
house. No, he doesn't want to do that. He wants to go play ball.
And that's the thing I love about it is that it's just kind of like, no, I want to go to the 24-hour fitness and ball with a few guys. Maybe one of them were decent.
Down to my ankles. Yeah, that's what I want to do. Adam Sandler. Solid pickup basketball player, bit of a floor general, the article suggests, not a ball hog, you know.
Always. Oh, dude, he throws some dimes on the court. Like He throws some absolute dimes on the court.
The article includes all of those viral links of Adam Sandler doing like a whip around pass from the top of the key to a guy cutting.
You are the best. You're the best, sir. That's my favorite, Bob.
Last second shot at the buzzer from Bob.
There you go. For that guy, Bob Silverman up there in New York City. For that other guy and friend of mine, Andrew Hammond in Detroit, Michigan. That is all we've got. We'll be back next Friday. Bob, pick of the week. Start thinking about it. Talk to y'all soon. All right, the Atlanta Sports Guys, we have reconvened for the local hour on this Chase Thomas podcast. And, you know, I am joined by Garrett Chapman of 99 The Game, as I am every Friday afternoon. Garrett, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. Just won $6 on a $3 scratch off. So it's a good
what?
Day. What a oh, day. Yeah. Big, big day.
Oh, my goodness. I was not expecting that. Do you do scratch offs often?
I just did it, like, no, I don't. I just said, screw it. I just saw one of them. Yeah, have you ever done that where you're just in the store or something and you just have a couple bucks in your pocket and you're just like, yeah, screw it. That's what I was thinking.
No, when I do that at a gas station, I end up getting another Gatorade or something.
See, I was over there to get a Red Bull, and then it's just like, and I saw it, and I have like a money clip in my wallet, and so it's not very.
Are you a drug dealer?
To carrying cash.
Is that what's happening here, Max? Do we just learn that Garrett's into illicit activities? Red Bulls, money clips.
There might have been some euphemisms in there that we that fell over.
It's like
head.
A little money clip. It's like inside of the wallet. So but like cash falls out sometimes. So I don't
you
got, carry
you
cash.
You carry a lot of cash.
Yeah. Why are you carrying cash?
No, I don't carry cash. It was the opposite.
I don't know.
I got to carry a couple bills for my scratch offs, my dollar scratchers. You know.
Oh my goodness. You gotta,
the real question is, what are you gonna do with all your winnings?
That is true.
Probably
$6.
Probably buy $6 scratchers.
$6 can get, that's like a third of the way to getting a Coors Light at Truist Park.
Damn. Well, when you put it that way.
Yeah, you gotta get a couple more. No, I'm the so I have a story on this. And also Max Markovich is here. Max.
Hello.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Today was the day I dove in on the, as you know, on the Joe Milton Tennessee experiment, and have just become endlessly fascinated with how that's going to go. So,
well, I expect you to watch the opener against Bowling Green. We're not in contention.
Oh, no. Now I'm all in on just seeing how it goes. Like I'm all in on Tennessee as you are.
There you go. I like it. You're already out on the Cade McNamara experience in Ann Arbor.
We were talking about Tennessee's quarterback options, and it just brought back deja vu from last year of like eminently competent is Cade McNamara, but nothing more than that.
Yeah, and you got a guy behind him though. You never know, JJ McCarthy. We should, like, that's a possibility.
The hope, the savior.
Yeah, exactly. No, what I was going to say before we get into some Atlanta sports guys, there is a really sketchy gas station by my house. Here in Knoxville, and usually on my cool downs and my runs, I will walk to that one and get a body armor, get a Gatorade Zero, and keep going on my walk. But it's super sketchy, and part of the, like, you can take me out of Atlanta, but you can't take Atlanta out of me. It's a strong thing where I was more into this gas station because of how sketchy it was, where I was like, oh, there could be a stabbing anytime. So like I'm just going to walk in and see what happens. There's always some crazy stuff when I walk in there, and like the person at the counter is just cursing up a storm with her coworker, which is something that I very much value. And just, I love, like, the customer service is terrible. There should be a bulletproof glass, wall at this gas station. They're not worried about it. They're about that life. I appreciate that. And there was this woman walk by in my run as I'm getting ready to go over there, who was like, be careful, there's someone who was like throwing around a screwdriver threatening to kill everybody. And I paused, and my dumb brain was like, I got to see this, because like screwdriver, I'll take my chances. If it was something more serious than, or is more terrifying, like a gun, for instance, then I would be like, yeah, I'm going to skip out on the gas station today. Screwdriver though. I didn't see her though. I literally walked into the gas station looking around. I'm like, is there someone wielding a screwdriver as a weapon? And there was not. So anyway, I'm not going to say which gas station this is, but that is part of the Chase Thomas podcast experience on a week-to-week basis, is stumbling into sketchy gas stations, because that's what I used to do in Atlanta. Sorry, Mom.
Maybe you should get a dollar scratcher or two next time you're there.
I will not. That is something I will not do, but I appreciate you bringing it back to these scratch-offs that you are all in on. I don't know what's happened to you, Garrett, but if you need to talk to somebody, Max is available.
Living life on the edge, you know?
Travis d'Arnaud got an extension in Atlanta today. What is your instant reaction to Travis d'Arnaud getting an extension, Garrett?
I mean, I think it's good. I mean, it's the Langleyers and Contreras. I mean, they're still a couple of years away. So this is something that the Braves were probably going to have to go do anyway. I mean, they were going to have to sign a catcher because, I mean, it's been a bit of a revolving door, so to speak, with his injury. So it kind of showed how valuable of a player he was. I think it's great. It's a team friendly deal. I think the Braves are better off for it. But it just shows that the young guys aren't ready, and d'Arnaud is. And d'Arnaud's here to stay in 2 years. I think he's a great locker room presence. Just all in all, just a good thing. Not exactly expected, but pleasant.
Max, what about you?
Yeah, I kind of felt like it came out of nowhere, but I did not expect that to come down the pipeline. Super team friendly deal. 2 years, $16 million. I think there's a club option second year. And I think it's the right move. I think, as Garrett said, like you're not going to want to, Chase, you were spending all offseason saying you don't want to sort of bank on the young guys when you're trying to win right now. Darno's a veteran. He's 32. He's reliable. You know what you're going to get. And it's obviously not an obtrusive deal in any way. So I'm all in favor.
Yeah. Like it's just the health stuff. Like I'm not sure how many plate appearances we're getting from him next year, but he has just been good, and I like having him in the fifth, sixth spot in the lineup. And we've seen how bad this catching spot can be when he's away and when you rely on the young guys, because there's a dark time that we've moved past the Kevon Smith era at catcher. Like we're 2 weeks away from like the corpse of Jeff Mathis arising behind the plate. So I'm glad that that is behind us, at least temporarily. But also, just like if you look around the league, this was something when I saw that extension, I was like looking at it because there's no like there the catcher position is pretty anemic across baseball these days. Like there is just not a lot of high-end talent. Like the Giants are hoarding two of the best and the young future star and Joey Bart and then Buster Posey now, but like most teams just don't have this guy. Like they don't have somebody like a d'Arnaud. So I think he is a unique piece, and I think because so many teams could use somebody like d'Arnaud, I think he will be a valuable trade chip if somebody like Langleyers. Yeah,
he's gonna be a good player.
Just rename him to Langerhans. Like this,
that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, like let's just go ahead and bring back Langerhans. Like that's his new name is on this very podcast. But if he or Contreras pops and turns into an everyday catcher, great. If not, like you still have d'Arnaud, but I do think his trade value will be strong next year, because when you look around the league, it's just a dearth of top veteran premier catcher talent.
Yeah, I mean, I think your goal here is just simply that you can't have a black hole in the lineup at catcher right there. And I think with d'Arnaud, I think the timing is weird just because of the season he's had and the injuries and the inconsistency. But with d'Arnaud, you sort of can count on, if he's healthy, you can count on a certain level of production where you're not going to be worried that it's just a complete void. And that's, at that price, that's kind of all you can ask for.
Yeah. I would agree. Our friends over at Sports Talk ATL has a piece up on 10 players to watch during the second preseason game. So I wanted to talk about the Falcons, their second one. Also, to bring it back, Garrett, you were at the first preseason game last week. I want to get your perspective on what you saw across the board.
Did we get hang time numbers?
That is true. I didn't get that text.
Shoot, I actually took a video. Hold on, let me see if I can still have this video. Let me see. I definitely did, because I was like, I thought it was hilarious, and then it was like it was pretty good hang time. I'm thinking it was a couple seconds, solid seconds. It was an end zone shot, but no. I mean, the game itself, I mean, it was just a dreadful game, but we had really good seats for it. We were sitting right there on the 50-yard line.
He was up there. When he sent that picture, I was like, he was downplaying significantly what he was walking into in Mercedes-Benz. Like, he was like, oh, I'm going to go to the game. They just gave me some tickets. No, they were like, hey, how would you like to sit in the best football seat in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
Oh, yeah. And then we ended the game. I think I was sitting three rows back on the 50-yard line. Mm. So it was pretty sweet. It's like the one where you can actually walk down to field level too, but you really can't see anything. But the cool thing about when you go down to field level is you can actually hear the conversations between players and coaches. Because it was really quiet in there, because obviously it's a preseason game. You're not going to fill it up. So I think it was maybe at 25% capacity at best. So it really wasn't loud. So you can go down there. I was behind the Titans bench and I was able to, listen in on things that they were doing and getting coached up and players having conversations. It was just kind of a cool experience. And I mean, I've never been to a preseason football game before, so it's definitely a first for me, but it was still a lot of fun. Now on the field, it was kind of a shitty day. I mean, AJ McCarron looks absolutely anemic. Felipe Franks, I mean, he had the one big run, and if it wasn't for that 52-yard run, this Falcons offense would have had under 100 yards of offense. It was just a miserable day. I mean, even Younghoe Koo got in on the kind of difficult day. He missed like what it was like 50-yard field goal. It was just not a very good showing. But the defense looks very good. I think Dean P. This is something I think I was saying a couple weeks ago. But with Dean Pease, I mean, he can get this defense potentially into the middle of the road rankings as far as like yards per game, points per game. I think he can. And he sent a lot of very interesting blitz packages, and I think he's going to have this defense ready to go.
I am not as worried about the offense. I think they're doing a lot of shell stuff. I don't think they're testing a lot of stuff out. I am not worried about it.
I mean, I'm not going to say I'm worried per se, but it was just bad. It just looked bad.
Mm. Orlando Ledbetter just unloading on the god awful AJ McCarron. Just journalistic integrity out of here. He's done. He's covered this team for long enough. He has moved on. AJ McCarron, can he be that bad?
He looked terrible.
I mean,
okay. So what was he? Why did he look terrible?
So he's got to be that bad.
Yeah. Like, what did you see? What was it that made him especially terrible for a backup quarterback?
He doesn't have any movement. I mean, I don't know what he brings. I really don't. I mean, he was missing passes badly. I mean, maybe it was the offensive line not holding up very well. Maybe that's what it was. But it was just not pleasant to watch. I mean, it's just, I don't know. He hasn't been able to – he hasn't convinced me that he would be a reliable option if Matt Ryan did get hurt. I've seen absolutely nothing that would lead me to believe that. But what Max was saying with the Blake Bortles talk. I'm interested in the Blake Bortles conversation. I would talk about that.
That wasn't where I was going. I just can't get worked up about the backup quarterback situation because literally no matter – like if Matt Ryan's out, like this team's going to suck. Like that's just kind of – there's no way around that. And it's not like – you know, certainly you could say like if this team was a contender, it would be worth investing in a good backup because, you know, if you lose Ryan for a couple weeks, you can stay afloat. But like – it's not, I mean, I don't know. Like, we kind of made the decision, like, this team had no cap space to work with. And if it had had cap space, it wasn't going to maneuver that onto a backup quarterback. It clearly wasn't going to invest in a backup quarterback early in the draft because there were so many other needs. And so it's just kind of one of those spots that, like, is going to be a weak spot. And I'm fine with it being a weak spot because if Matt Ryan goes down, this season's tanked anyway. The crude reality of that is that if Matt Ryan went down and the team sucked, we'd be in a pretty good spot to get his replacement. But we don't have to think about that yet.
No, not yet. And I don't want to think about that. It's just like the Trey stuff. It's like, I mean, baseball is different. Like the Braves just playing as well as they have without Acuna is remarkable. But it's also because you've seen this with Mike Trout. And now Shohei Ohtani, where he's the best player in baseball and the Angels are like a game under 500 right now. It just doesn't matter as much. Your best player going to like being amazing. Unfortunately for those great players is that it's so much more of a team game. Matt Ryan or Trey going down, that the season's over. There's no point.
I don't think it's like the Trey stuff because like the backup point guard plays an important role. Because, you know, Trey's going to play, what, 35 minutes a game in the regular season. And the backup point guard has an important role, as we've seen with the Hawks, where when Trey goes out, like, sometimes the offense falls off a cliff. Like, the backup point guard is going to play every single night and play, you know, sometimes a decisive role in the outcome, even if Trey is healthy. the backup quarterback doesn't do anything, ideally. Like, if Ryan's healthy and he's you know, knock on wood, been healthy all year, most of his career, the backup quarterback is completely irrelevant. And so I think it's just one of those spots where this roster is not – the roster is not loaded with depth at really any position. And so backup quarterback was not going to be a spot they were able to invest in right now.
I would just feel a lot more comfortable if Chris Redman was getting some snaps.
Is Matt Schaub like retired?
I think so.
Yeah. No,
he'd be enticed.
Yeah. He was probably what was he making this last couple of years? Like $6 million a year or something ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't think
that's the life, man.
He had a good run. Yeah, he had a good run. Jalen Mayfield moving back inside. Max, what do you make of that and what you saw in the preseason game?
Man, there are some red flags with this Jalen Mayfield thing already. He played tackle in college. He flashed in college. I would not say he was ever like consistently a stud or anything like that, but he also didn't play that many games. He didn't start that many games in college. And they put him at tackle to start this year because I think they wanted him to assert himself at right tackle while McGarry was out. And I think that they wanted him to play tackle, and he's not really built like a guard. But it was sort of like when he was drafted, it was assumed like he's sort of the guard by necessity because that was the hole in the O-line. But now they moved him back to guard, and it seems like he's not even sort of locked down that spot yet. And so I think they're just trying to figure it out with him. And, you know, ideally they'd be figuring it out in a way that wasn't going to directly impact this season, or like especially the beginning of this season, but it seems like he's going to have to play somewhere at some point. And there are lots of signs that he's not ready. And so, you know, we were talking about the offense earlier, or Chase mentioned that you're not that worried about the offense, and I'm not that worried about the offense either. But if you were to be worried about the offense, if you were to build a case that it's going to be not a very good offense, it starts up front and like not trusting, you know, 3/5 of the O-line, 2/5 of the O-line, which could really just, you know, sort of derail everything. I'm not there yet, and I want to see sort of, you know, who asserts themselves, who how it meshes, and you know, maybe Mayfield is a solid guard and none of this is relevant, but if you were to be concerned about the offense, that's where it starts.
No, I mean, you're certainly right there. I mean, like, honestly, it starts and ends with that offensive line play because Matt Ryan can't do much of anything if he's playing from his back. Yeah, Jalen Mayfield. I kind of like Jalen Mayfield more as a guard. I think that's just my opinion of him. I also like Caleb McGarry more as a guard. I think he would actually fit very well there. But look, I mean, we need a right tackle, so I guess one of those guys has to play it. This offensive line is probably the most important thing to watch. I want to see what is happening on this line, just with the center position, with Alex Mack being gone. I want to see what Jake Matthews is doing. I really just want to see some of these starters come in and get some minutes in the second preseason game, because we didn't see a single starter really for the most part outside of some of these young guys. And it's the offensive line has been a work in progress since that 2016 run where I think they played every single game. Every single starter played every single game throughout the entire course of the season, which just doesn't happen. And then you lose Chester, and then you lose everybody else, and then it's just in this line that's just been sort of in flux since then. But look, I mean, they have to be better. They have to be at least average because Matt Ryan, I mean, he's not exactly a mobile quarterback. He's good at navigating a pocket. But Jalen Mayfield, I mean, he's definitely a guy I'm going to be watching in the second game at left guard.
But it's frustrating. It's frustrating that we're talking about the offensive line like this because that is a spot the Falcons, you know, the previous regime really invested in. And like you're talking about Jake Matthews, who's making top dollar, who was at one point an early first round pick, Chris Lidstrom, a guard who was taken really high for a guard first round pick, Caleb McGarry, who was a first round pick. And so if you invest that kind of capital on your offensive line, you know, fairly recently, not to mention, you know, drafting Matt Hennessy in the third, I believe, and then Drew Dahlman in the fourth, you expect that to not be like a spot where we're sort of like throwing our hands up and saying, yeah, I don't know, maybe Caleb McGarry's better at guard. Like, that's not how this should be going. And so that's sort of the most frustrating thing. But, you know, I still think that the potential is there for this to be an above average offensive line. There are just a few too many question marks for a spot that this franchise has really tried to shore up over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, that's fair. I also think it's interesting that Quadri Allison's position in the depth chart is very much up in the air, and that Arthur Smith said it was a big week for him. So I'm curious if he's on the chopping block, because that backup running back spot is still very much open. And as a Javion Hawkins stan, could not be more delighted to see that maybe he's going to be all right. Or maybe it's just Deontay Foreman's world and we're just living in it.
No, I have a lot of question marks about this running back room. I mean, it's just, especially coming from this Arthur Smith system. I mean, he wants to run the football and establish the ground game. I don't know if we have those guys to do that necessarily. I think we'll be okay. I mean, I'm just sort of like lukewarm about a lot of these positions not named that aren't like the wide receiver positions. I'm just very lukewarm. I think we'll have a good offense. I mean, but I don't know how well it fits into what Arthur Smith wants to do. And I guess we really won't know until we see some of these starters play, which I'm just praying that we see some of these starters.
Go ahead.
I just think that that's part of it's sort of a similar conversation to the backup quarterback position, where this roster was in such a deep hole. The position that Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith came into was not one where they could afford, like, they had to cut corners with this roster basically, and so you're deciding what corners to cut. Are you going to invest in a real backup quarterback? No. And they said they saw that running back, you know, given the trends in the league and the kind of production you can get out of low cost running backs, they decided that was a spot you can cut corners. And you know, I understand that thought process, and I, you know, generally agree with it, but it's just like, there was no win there. Like, there was, sure, would you like to have Najee Harris in this backfield? That'd be awesome. But you couldn't afford to do that given the makeup of the rest of the roster and the salary cap space and all that. And so I think it's the same conversation we'll probably be having for a couple more years, maybe. You know, hopefully not, but there's no good answers here right now, and I think running back is one of those spots.
Yeah, I think so. But hey, this is going to be an interesting week, and we're getting closer and closer. Only this one and one more, and then regular season football, which is going to be a treat. Kevin Herter's restricted free agency. We can talk a little bit about Lawson signing with the Hawks, but I am now curious. I'm growing more and more curious, because if you do a quick check at who's left in the 2022 free agent market, like, do y'all stop me if you've heard this story before, guys, but an Atlanta Hawk who is an impending restricted free agent is now going to find himself in a market where he might be the best available role player available for a lot of teams around the league. So when we talked about John Collins ad nauseum this past year, is because we were concerned with how much money he was going to get and what this was going to look like. I think the same situation is brewing with Herter, because he is now walking into a restricted free agent year, and it's Bradley Beal, who could, after October 1st, lock in a 5-year, almost, I think it's almost $200 million contract extension with Washington. And then it's Zach LaVine. After that, there is no one left. There is no one out there. Like, you can, I mean, unless you're like the biggest Michael Porter Jr. guy, we'll see what his restricted free agency looks like if they don't agree to an extension before the season. But Herter is suddenly going to be a top 3 commodity on the restricted free agent front. And I'm curious to see if that is going to affect how Travis Schlenk goes into negotiations with him in the next 2 months, because this was not a situation he had to consider until all of these superstars like Kawhi and Kevin Durant, and it seems like Kyrie and Harden are getting it done soon as well, that, like, oh no, suddenly it's just like going to be only role players, and Herter might be the best of the bunch. So I'm very curious to get y'all's perspective on this. Is this something that we have to start thinking about, Max?
Yeah, I'm actually really glad you brought this up, because it's more about what you're not hearing than what you are hearing. Like, if they were determined to lock up Kevin Herter and get that done, you would know that right now. And I think it's an interesting spot for Schlenk to be in, because this is the highest his value has ever been, like, by a lot. Like, what do you, like, I'm not going to say he doubled his annual value in the playoffs, but like, you know, probably like 30% inflation based on his playoff performance. And so is Travis Schlenk going to lock that in and continue to sort of limit the future options of this roster, I guess you could say? Or is he going to sort of wait it out and let Kevin Huerter's value find its level? I think, you know, obviously we were really encouraged by what Kevin Huerter did in the playoffs, and you know, he's already probably better than any of us expect him to be. But you know, paying him right now would probably not be like paying him what he would get on the open market right now would probably not be shrewd business. And so it's an interesting spot to be in. And I think it's clear that the Hawks kind of just want to wait it out and see what kind of, because everything looming over this is what is the big trade down the line? Like everything is setting up for that. And so you have to kind of manage and juggle all these decisions around that axis. And Kevin Huerter being part of a trade like that would make a lot of sense, but the timing has to line up and all that. And so it's an interesting spot. And I think it's more important what you're not hearing on this than what you are.
Garrett, what do you think?
I mean, I see him making kind of what Joe Harris makes. I mean, I see him in that role kind of. What is that, 4 years, $75 million, something in that range. I think that's good money for him. I think that's well-deserved. I mean, it's an interesting way to put it, Max. I mean, it's like where you're not hearing about all of this. But I think Travis Schlenk, didn't Travis Schlenk mention this a couple of weeks ago, saying that he was having these conversations with Kevin Huerter's representation just a couple weeks ago, just after Trae Young got that signing. I'm pretty sure he was having those conversations, and he's a guy that you want to have here in Atlanta. I mean, because he's a key contributor, and he showed the value that he brings to the table just in this past playoffs. And I mean, he's a guy I want to have on this roster as long as possible, because he's a plus role player, and he's going to be able to do things very effectively off the bench or in a starting role. I mean, he was a key part in this entire Hawks playoff run. But I like the way you phrased it, Max, where it's like it kind of like it's the build up towards something like which we assume is going to be just this impending trade. We're going to go acquire some superstar for a lot of these role players. But I mean, I don't know who that person's going to be just yet, but I like the idea of Kevin Huerter being in a Hawks uniform.
I would also say like, it's a precarious spot to be in, because Kevin Huerter is obviously like a really important part of this basketball team, and was at times like our second best player in the playoffs, I think you could say. Mm-hmm. But like a lot of these teams get in difficult spots when, I know Chase has brought this up a few times, when you pay role players more than like when you pay role players like stars, basically. And so Kevin Huerter on the open market, if you got a Joe Harris type deal, would be making more than his role on this team. But it's also the same position the Kings were in with Bogdanovich, where it's like, do you just let the asset go for nothing? Like, none of us want that. And so you kind of have to play this game of like not getting in the sticky situation of overpaying for a role player while also retaining the asset and getting something for the asset if you don't pay him.
Well, that's all the more reason to sign him right now then, so he doesn't get that.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess it's a bet on whether you think his value will return back to some median level. Like, Kevin Huerter, this is the most valuable Kevin Huerter's ever been. Mm-hmm. If you're betting that this is just the player he is, like, he's going to be a really good starting caliber player on, like, a team that can make the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals, like, yeah, go ahead, pay him. But as we've said many times, you can only pay a certain number of guys. So, like, are you betting on him over DeAndre Hunter? Are you betting on him over Cam Reddish? These are all questions that I'm sure they're thinking about.
And we also don't know if Huerter has told them like, I'm good. I want to explore restricted free agency next summer. I've looked at the market. I've talked to my agent. I want to see what kind of offer sheet I can get by playing extended minutes. And what I did, it's going to be a gamble, not to the extent that Dennis Schroeder gambled this past year, but I do think it is a gamble. 'Cause like you said, His value has never been higher. And when you're a role player like that, I understand the urgency, if that's where he goes, of like, I need to secure the bag now because of just where I'm at. 'Cause I don't know if I can ever have a run as good as what I just had in Atlanta. And there's higher expectations. The rotation is going to be it's going to be, let's see, how can I phrase this? The rotation's going to be more
crowded.
Yeah, I guess crowded is the best way. And he could get lost in the shuffle depending on how certain things go. And that's got to be scary for him because this is the opportunity for a role player like him to cash in. So he is a big, big situation on his hands that I'm very fascinated to see how this all unfolds. But to this point, I also think a lot of it's going to depend on how Hunter is. Like, so much of these two are intertwined this year is Hunter's knee and Kevin Herter. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting thing to monitor because I think the Hawks trust Herter a lot more. And I think it, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. There was also a piece in, go ahead.
One more thing. Yeah. Like, if you phrase it like this, Kevin Herter averaged 12 points a game last year. 3 rebounds, 3 assists on 43% shooting from the field, 36-ish from 3. Like, if you just put that stat line out there as, like, a, you know, a random resume type of thing, that's not a guy that you just, like, you know, blanketly say, all right, $20 million a year, right? Mm-hmm. And if he did that again next year, let's say on, you know, 20, 25 minutes a game, whatever, like, that's sort of... If he matches his exact stats, like, that's sort of a regression back to his value. And I guess what I would say is that, like, if I was Kevin Herter's agent, you were saying, you know, maybe he wants to just explore restricted free agency. I think I would have the opposite. I think I would push for the extension right now just so you don't have to worry about whether that logjam negatively affects your minutes, negatively deflates your stats, and therefore suppresses your value and just securing this value right now. And so, you know, I think... Yeah, his value is as high as it's ever been, and if he was to sort of just replicate last year, it would return back to some, like, probably closer to 10 to 15 million a year rather than the 20 number.
But that's why you play the game, as they say. One last thing. The Danilo Gallinari stuff is going to be interesting because his contract, I don't think any of us really like, but it's just one of the things they had to do to beef this roster up to make a playoff push this past year. There was a piece in Sports Talk ATL about this and whether or not this is where people jump the gun a little bit too much, where the piece argues whether or not the Hawks should trade Gallinari because of the addition of Jalen Johnson. Jalen Johnson looks like he's going to be a player. I'm very high on Jalen Johnson. I'm excited to see how he acclimates into this group. That being said, you do not move Gallinari for a rookie like Jalen Johnson on a team that could win the East next year. Like, you have to bring him along slowly. You have to, like, rookies just don't make that kind of impact. And Gallinari hit a lot of big shots for this team last postseason. And he's very hot and cold, but that's just part of being a bench guy, where Danilo Gallinari is at this point, where he's someone who on a random Tuesday can win you a game because he just gets hot and goes 20-8, and there you go. You beat the Hornets that night because Gallinari was there. That is not something a rookie like Jalen Johnson's going to do. So the scoring aspect, I don't agree with, and I think Gallinari is going to be more of a factor, especially with Okongwu gone, with DeAndre Hunter's questions with his health. Like, I just think that he is still someone who is a valuable piece, at least for one more year before we even consider moving on from a vet like Gallo.
No, I mean, yeah, I like Danilo Gallinari on this team. I think he's, I think that's a bit premature, truthfully. I think I saw that piece. I don't think I read the full piece, but I mean, it is premature. I mean, I think he makes this team better with him on it, especially with Nyeko Kongwu, because he's going to miss 6 months. Because we're going to need a guy who can come in and play that four.
Yeah. Or five sometimes.
Guy. Or even five. Yeah. So I think he can come and do that kind of a small ball lineup. He makes the Hawks better. And it's not like the Hawks are really strapped for cash right now. We're under the cap. We're just fine. We've signed most of the players that we're going to have this year. So we're fine. I'm not worried about it. Why trade him? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I think the whole moral of this offseason is that the Hawks are going for it next year. And if you're going for it, you're not moving off of a valuable piece of your playoff rotation to work on the development of a 19-year-old. Period. A guy you took 20th overall who, you know, sure looks like he's going to be a player, but he's probably not a guy who's going to help you much in a title race. I mean, that's kind of what it is. And one small note on Gallinari, I think we probably said a lot of bad things about him on this podcast early in the year. But he came around, obviously, at the end. He shot 40% from three for the season. And one small note that I think is kind of important is that he signed a three-year, $60 million deal, but the third year is not even close to fully guaranteed. It's, I think it's like $5 million fully guaranteed, and the rest of it is basically a team option if they don't waive him. And so, you know, he's old. He's injury-prone. Like, if you wanted to move off of that, it wouldn't cost you much at that time. And so I don't think this is a situation where the Hawks – we talk a lot about their like the salary cap and who they're going to pay and who they're not going to pay. This is not something where you need to move off Danilo Gallinari in order to eventually pay so-and-so. And like, they can move off that deal if they wanted to. And so there's no real reason to look to move him out.
Last thing we'll wrap up here tonight, guys. The Hawks get a national TV game. Christmas Day. When was the last time we got to watch the Atlanta Hawks on Christmas Day? Has this happened in our lifetime?
Has it ever happened?
1989 was the last time.
Okay, so I was not alive. Wow.
Exactly.
And it's going to be great.
Long time.
Knicks, that was Hawks, Dominique Christmas?
And I think they played, it was Dominique Wilkins playing against the Boston Celtics with Larry Bird. It was a good game.
Even better that Trey gets to play at home.
Oh, yeah. I'm just excited. It's incredible. I mean, that's going to be fantastic. I mean, plus you have the Mavericks opening up the season too. I think the amount of national television games, nationally televised games that the Hawks are going to get this year, they put the league on notice in the playoffs, and I'm excited.
19 nationally televised games this year.
19?
Yep. How many did we have last year?
I didn't know it was that high.
One.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one, I think, last year. That's why everyone was sleeping on the Hawks come playoffs. It's because no one watched them. No one saw them play.
They gave Zion and the Pelicans all those games only for that team not even to make the playoffs. And then
it was terrible.
And then the Hawks come in here and take them back.
Wreck the party, man. No, the Hawks are going to be a good team next year. I'm so excited for that. I'm so ready for basketball season. I need the Falcons to be good enough to get me to October 30th. Or what is it, October 20th? What's that first game?
There you go.
I'm actually looking at this schedule.
I'm not ready. I'm in football mode right now. I am in football mode, playoff baseball mode. I'm not there yet. I'm
Chase. Both of your football teams are going to be irrelevant in like 2 weeks. Let's be honest. Mine too. Like, let's just be real.
I know my dogs are going to be doing just fine come October. They'll be in good shape. We'll see what they do against Clemson, though. That'll be a fun game.
I think Florida is more of the question mark there. Clemson, we can go and pencil that L in there, but Florida, wow. Florida is the one that I'm more interested in. Florida is the one.
I kind of think they could beat Clemson.
Okay,
Georgia can absolutely beat Clemson, I think it all depends on who wins the trenches in that game. We're doing a full breakdown coming up here two Tuesdays from now. We're doing a full breakdown of that game. That's going to be a really good one, but honestly, I think
so. You're overlooking Bowling Green, Tennessee on Thursday night under the lights at Neyland on the SEC Network. We're just overlooking Scott Loeffler and the Bowling Green Falcons coming into Knoxville for Joe Milton's debut. That's what we're overlooking.
Joe Milton,
the start of Joe Milton's Heisman campaign. Yeah, of course.
Oof.
It's a possibility, man. He's either going to be.
What's a possibility?
No. What I'm saying, not with the Heisman. What I am saying is he's either going to be electric and so much fun, or like go full Dylan Gabriel and we just look like UCF immediately, or it's going to be an absolute disaster and we see Hendon Hooker in here in week 2.
I just want to say I've seen every snap Joe Milton's ever played in college. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to have much fun. Okay, I'm just going to leave it there.
No, won't do it. What I heard there is, Chase, drink the Kool-Aid, go Big Orange, VFL, Rocky Top, let's rock. Things are great. That's all I heard.
I do like
Alvin Kamara
Hyatt,
on the sideline now.
The wide receiver.
You like who?
He can have a pretty big season.
Jalen Hyatt?
Yeah.
I mean, Cedric Tillman.
Hypo offense.
Yeah, it's just we have a lot of dudes. I'd probably say Velus Jones leads this group. Hyatt's been kind of banged up the last few months, but we'll see. We have a lot of options. One of the cool things about Tennessee is they march towards 12-0 this fall is that they have a lot of new, fresh faces. The air raid is going to be a lot of fun. They're going to catch a lot of teams off guard. So when they're in Gainesville, and they just demoralized Dan Mullen and Emory Jones, and then they traveled back to Tuscaloosa for their revenge tour based on what happened last year. It's gonna be fun. Like the two-headed monster of Teyon Evans and Jabari Small in the backfield is just gonna be too much for a lot of people to handle. People are worried about Wanya Morris and Eric Gray moving on, Henry Toa moving to Alabama. Not this guy. Juwan Mitchell, linebacker one. Who's worried? Alante Taylor locking people up out wide. Walter Nealon coming in there next year. Walter Nolan, excuse me. Like that gigantic defensive tackle at Powell.
Walter Nolan's not going to Tennessee.
He is. And then you have
Is this what Tennessee fans have to do to like help themselves sleep at night? Is this what you get? Do you just like roll these things over in your head or something, or are you still having nightmares of Georgia coming up to Knoxville and dropping 45 points on you?
And that'll do it for today's episode of the Atlanta Sports Guys, where Garrett cut out at the end there.
I want to knock Garrett down a peg. Mm-hmm. The way this Georgia season goes, and then we can close out. I don't want to belabor this, but the way this Georgia season goes, I hope you know, is they beat Clemson and the hype machine goes to like 10, and then they lose to Florida and then lose to Alabama, and that's how it ends. They beat Clemson, they go to like number 2 in the country or whatever, and then they lose to Florida. Maybe they lose one more like stupid game, and then they lose to Alabama.
Well, that's exactly how it happened the last year, or one of the last couple of big years of Mark Richt. They had Clemson come to town, and they came to Athens, and Georgia just ran all over them, basically. And then Todd Gurley ended up getting suspended, and that ended up throwing a complete monkey wrench into the season. And that was what started the Nick Chubb run, though. So it's like Nick Chubb started his 15 consecutive games rushing for over 100 yards. That's what started that. It was a Todd Gurley suspension, but they lost to Florida, ended up losing the SEC championship game. So that's exactly how that happened. But they're not losing to Florida this year. No chance they lose to Florida this year. Not happening.
This is the arrogance that just drives people away from the Georgia train.
No, it's not arrogance. I mean, they're not losing to Florida.
Beat you.
I can see them going. I could definitely see exactly what he just said happening.
Mm-hmm.
Just not to Florida. They're not going to lose to Florida. They're going to be ready to play that game.
Max, you already see this coming, right?
They could lose a different game. Yeah.
Max, we see this coming.
I've fully relinquished hope on Michigan. They're going to go 7-5.
The schedule looks like a 7-5. You could listen to our Big Ten preview last week on this very podcast.
It depends if you believe in like Indiana and Penn State and
as you should.
But it's kind of irrelevant.
Penn State Auburn, what is that, week 2? Week 3?
Ooh, I can't wait for that one. That one's going to be a delight.
Out up with Auburn going up there, that's going to be a great football game.
And who doesn't love College Game Day starting off in, let me check my notes here, Charlotte at the Panther Stadium, because Clemson, Georgia is on a neutral site.
Well, no, they'll be here in Atlanta. They're here in Atlanta for week 0.
No. I'm saying for that game. That's week 1.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely in Charlotte for that.
Yeah. Week 0, I thought they were going to be in Nebraska or Illinois.
I'm going to Google it.
Why would they not just go to Illinois? Go to Champaign. Isn't Nebraska on the road at Illinois?
What a doozy of a football game that'll be.
Hey, I mean, Scott Frost, must win. Brett Bielema back in the Big Ten. I'll be watching, taking notes. I can't wait for that game. That game's going to be dumb. That game is going to be extremely stupid.
In Atlanta.
They're going to be in Atlanta?
It's for the HBCUs.
Oh, okay. Wait, yeah, they're doing
Carolina
that in week
Central
0?
Alcorn State playing on ESPN 7 p.m.
Hmm. Okay. Very cool.
Next weekend.
Very cool. Are you going to the Corky Kell this week?
I was at the Corky Kell on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was up there, West Forsyth. They have this tight end up there, number 4. What's his dad going? I can't remember his name. 4-star recruit. Kid is an
Oscar
animal.
Dell.
Yep, he is an animal. He's
Michigan
so
wants
good.
Him so bad.
Ooh.
And
yeah,
so
Michigan
Georgia.
Was the first
Georgia's
to offer
Georgia's
going to
get
him. At the Corky Kell.
Wait,
last
you know
year.
What? This is how we bring this all full circle. Would you like to guess what the mascot is for the West Forsyth High School football team?
I know what it is.
Scratch off. Dollar scratch off.
It's Max, do you know? Wolverine.
No, I don't.
The Wolverines.
No. Okay, there we go.
Hey, it's fate. It could be fate. Well, Garrett, go check out my Part B Panthers tomorrow as they take on, I don't even know who they're playing tomorrow. I did see. Is
Hoover's
it Mill Creek?
To town. Hoover's coming to play North Gwinnett.
Ooh. Is Resh Probst going to be in the house? Old friend? We'll Resh Probst, is he in the house?
I think you guys are playing Lowndes. Aren't you playing Lowndes?
Are we playing Lowndes? I thought it was Mill Creek. Maybe I'm wrong. It might be Lowndes.
I'm going to look it up.
Parkview's back, though. Here. I'm looking at my Parkview helmet right now. I think Parkview and Brookwood are both playing in the Corky Hill. Back as nature intended. We are really far down this high school Georgia football rabbit hole at this moment. So we will wrap up on this edition of the Atlanta Sports Guys that you can listen to every single Friday on this very feed. You can find Garrett at GChapATL and listen to you on 99 The Game. And also follow Max Markovich at Max_Markovich on twitter.com. Guys, thank you so much for the time. As always, I will talk to you both next week.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.